Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
It's the Neverland Podcast, episode 86.
Up to Neverland!
Take a start of the right and stay until morning. Neverland.
Good morning, Neverland!
Hey, how are you doing? Welcome back to the Neverland Podcast. And hey, by the way, if you got your pixie in your pocket, take that pixie out of your pocket, sprinkle some of that pixie dust. We're going off to Neverland. Hey, I am your Pan. I am Jeremy, the Spider Pan, the Pan here in the Neverland Podcast. We're going to have a lot of fun today. I have a great conversation to share with you with a couple of friends of mine here, a couple of listeners, and we're going to talk about Marvel, DC, and branch into a little bit. Yes, it is comics 103. It is your third class on learning a little bit of the history of comics, the social effects and things like that. This was a lot of fun. You're going to enjoy it. Plus, we do have an update for the Neverland Disney Battle of the Bands, or Battle of the Disney Bands. There have been some amazing changes to the lineup of the bands. We have had some hirings and firings and things like that, and I'm going to tell you all about it later. But first, let's go ahead and just dive right into my conversation.
To Disney and beyond.
Okay, Neverlanders, it's time for comics. Well, now we're up to 103 because this is the third time we've just sat around and talked a little bit about the history of comics and the love of comics and stuff like that. We're going to nerd out big time.
Which is hard to imagine.
Hard to imagine around here. So, okay. Of course, I never go alone when I'm going to geek out this much because it gets even geekier the more of us we get together. So, of course, I've brought in Lost Boy Philip, who hasn't been on the show, but golly, since last season.
Yeah.
My goodness. Okay. And I even have your picture up there as a potential co-host, but he's really busy these days, so I never hardly get to talk to him anymore.
Sorry.
So, and I'm back for the third time. He's becoming a regular, Mr. Eric Warren.
Howdy.
Back again. You're becoming a regular. We were hoping to get our good buddy Rick Myers on here again, but he has been feeling under the weather. So hopefully he's feeling better. And so this is for you, Rick. So hopefully he's listening. So, alrighty. Well, last time, Rick and I were talking about some of the social commentary that they made in comics with dealing with racism and drugs and things like that, and how they had to tiptoe around the comics code. And how DC finally decided to kick in the door one day and showed Green Arrow's ward Speedy shooting up. And what was the line in there, Eric?
My ward Speedy is a junkie.
Dun, dun, dun. I just love the way you deliver that. It's great.
Stephen Amell, but...
Well, sure.
Yeah.
I must become something different, and you must not be a junkie. I don't know. I can't do a good Stephen Amell, but... he's become something else. So, of course, right now his ward Speedy seems like they're moving forward with his sister in the next season of Arrow to be Speedy. Uh-huh. And she was a druggie in the first season. So it kind of fits. Yeah, it's like they're getting around to it.
They oftentimes call him arson, nowadays. Arson was what Speedy became.
Oh, you mean Arsenal.
Our Arsenal, that's right.
Yeah, who's Arson?
That's right, Arsenal. Excuse me, I misspoken.
Yeah, because he became the Red Arrow and then became Arsenal. And, yeah. I kind of hope he comes back, but I guess there was some sort of contractual things why he had to leave. And so he's supposed to have been in his last episode. But I really kind of, I liked him. He was, just as they were kind of developing him and making him a good teammate, he's gone. Although, of course, we're talking about TV now. But apparently, Diggle is getting a mask. And a character now. We don't know who he's going to be called. You know, I think they're just inventing something. He joked apparently.
Which is fine, you know.
He joked at some convention that he is known as Black Driver.
Well,
because he was the driver, you know.
Truth is, this show is far from the comic, or at least what it used to be. Yeah. And I don't know now, but that
changing
being said,
now. He's coming out as Green Arrow.
I do like it. I do like it. I mean, it's taken me a couple. I got to admit, if it weren't for the Flash appearing on the show. And changing the tone of it. I don't know that I'd even be watching it now. But whenever the Flash showed up, they gave him a mask. I mean, it was Barry Allen that gave him the mask.
Yeah.
You know? It really, to me, changed everything.
Yeah. And it's changing more this season. I can't wait to see the effects of the season finale of the Flash. I have a feeling that's going to alter the reality.
And they got
the,
spinoffs and all that coming. You know?
Yes. Oh, I'm so excited.
Jake Eric's on his way. And
yeah, that's right.
This is going to be so cool. So... So yes, very exciting, but we're talking TV here. To get back into, let's talk a little bit about the 80s of comics. Now, of course, we did mention with Rick last time of they had started doing the Infinite Crisis and all that stuff, and I think wasn't there an Identity Crisis, but there's so many different Infinity Crisis and
the
DC staple.
Yeah, Identity Crisis came later on in the early millennium, which I enjoy, like 2004 or whatever, but the Infinity Crisis... What had happened was in the 50s and 60s and 70s, they had so many different universes, especially in the early 80s, that it got to be downright ridiculous that you didn't know.
And we're talking DC.
DC here. Yeah, DC has so many universes, you couldn't hardly keep up with anything. And but that being said, they decided to get rid of that and bring it all into one universe to take their favorite parts of all these universes and combine it. And I kind of enjoyed that. And then throughout my teenage days, we were still in that. And then a few years back, they decided to blow it up into 2 bazillion, you know, universes again, which I think kind of was a little too much. But you know what you're going to do.
But this saw a relaunch of Superman. I did actually find at a local library the relaunching of Superman, and they made some changes. They had his father remaining alive. And what I really enjoyed is they gave him a thought process to starting to wear the glasses. Because when he starts... kind of working a little bit as Superman, mainly he's just like, you know, I can do something about this. Here, these people are in danger. Let me do something. And he's trying to move quick and say, okay, well, hopefully no one's going to get a good look at me. And he realized that, you know, his face is just out there, and if somebody's going to recognize him, so he starts purposely, okay, well, I'm going to wear these glasses, and, you know, that'll help, and then just make sure nobody really gets a good look at me as Superman. So, and I kind of like that. It kind of helped establish the disguise.
I think a lot of that, too, was because how Christopher Reeve handled the role in the 70s.
Oh, so good.
Late 70s, early 80s, which, in my opinion, was what made it a lot more, quote-unquote, believable, in the sense that he had different hairdo, different glasses, and he acted and even talked completely different than Superman, which, yeah, it was still cornball. We probably didn't know who he was. But if you didn't spend a lot of time with Superman, I only saw him from afar, but you spent a lot of time with Clark, you wouldn't think, you know, hey, this is the same guy.
So what were you reading in the 80s, Eric?
Well, you know, I actually was reading Superman. That was, you know, thanks to Christopher Reeve and the Superman movies. Yes. That's what I loved, and that's what I had. For the most part, everything I read was post-crisis. You know, speaking of the glasses, I remember one of those John Byrne issues where you had Lex Luthor sitting back in a chair looking at this wall-sized screen with a dot matrix picture of Superman and Clark Kent side by side, you know, kind of like how we'd see Peter Parker with half of his face covered with a Spider-Man mask. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was, you know, Clark Kent with the glasses on one side, Superman on the other side. And the gist of that story was Lex Luthor going, no, I can't believe that Superman is Clark Kent. Nobody with the power of Superman would humble themselves that much to go around like a regular person.
I like it. He's thinking the way Lex would think.
Yeah.
Lex so arrogant, he wouldn't do that.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. But I love the stories from that era. There was a the first post-crisis appearance of Mr. Mixie's Piddalick was, that was the first book that I bought of Superman. And, you know, it started off with, this big husky guy walking through the streets of Metropolis and things magically happening around him. And he walked into the offices of the Daily Planet and turned Lois Lane into a mannequin. And at that point, I'm hooked. I'm going, what in the world is going on here? How can this happen? And, you know, to my 11-year-old mind at the time, I was just like, wow, what is happening? And I was hooked from that point on. I mean, I went back, looked at the Titano stuff, looked at all of the Bill Drocks, and that was a great time for me. Just latching onto Superman, and my brother's Spider-Man was their guy, but for me, it was always Superman.
Superman has always been my favorite. Him and Batman always have, and always will be my very favorites. When I was little, I watched a lot of the Adam West because they used to show the movie every 3 or 4 months.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. 3 or 4 months to us back then. I mean, I was 3 or 4. So 3 or 4 months seemed like a long time. Now it's not that long. But either way, I used to watch that and the Superman movies and the cartoons and Super Friends.
Yes. Yeah, Super Friends.
Which in the early 80s would become Superpowers to sell toys, which were great, you know. I remember one of the great things, speaking of Clark Kent and all that, I love, like, 1984, if you bought from Kenner Toys the Superpowers toy line, you got 5 of them. With 5 free purchase, you could get Clark Kent for free. And look, Clark Kent has superpowers just like Superman.
Wait, yeah, they had that commercial with the actor Olsen. Who was playing Jimmy Olsen's like, yeah. Clark? Superman? And he freaks out as the elevator closes. I'll have to try to find that commercial and share the audio with the audience now if I find it.
You know, speaking of superpowers and Crisis on Infinite Earths, you know, in preparation for us chatting here today, I went ahead and I pulled out a lot of my old comics from the 80s. I don't have that many, and I only had like 3 issues of Crisis on hand. But the back issue of one of these has got Superman, the Kenner figure right there. Raising his fists up and down. Inside there's an article or an ad for the Super Friends. As I look at my Secret Wars stuff, there's no ads for the Mattel toys. Yeah. I mean, true, I've only got a couple issues of Secret Wars, but you know, that was the whole reason Secret Wars began was Mattel saw what was happening with Kenner and with the Super Friends, and they wanted to do something with Marvel to get their sense up.
Do you remember the shield that you could get that would have kind of like, I guess you want to call them magic, but there's these little circle pieces of, I guess, cardboard, but it has pictures of Hulk or whatever. And when you turn it to the side, you suddenly see Hulk, you know, raising his arms up. You know, it's almost like animated. You go from one picture to another. And they'd come with a shield. They'd come this little shield type thing. Like the pictures wouldn't work unless you put them in that shield. Mm-hmm. And they'd make them move. And that would come with, every character came with one. Wolverine, I remember that was the first Wolverine toy they made that I was.
Oh, yeah.
And it had these claws, but what you did is you attached them to his hand. They came with little, you know, clips on there, and they attached his hand, and that was always a lot of fun. Not knowing the character, I spent most of my time having it on his feet because I didn't know anything.
Yeah, in the 80s, I wasn't even familiar with Wolverine. My major areas of comics for the 80s was Superman movies. The Batman 60s series that was being shown like right after He-Man every day.
Until 89.
Until 89, yep. And then Spider-Man and his Amazing Friends. And probably through the 80s, I guess, Superman would have been my number one. Because he's the icon. He's the hero you would always look up to. He could do anything. But Spider-Man, as anyone who wants to listen to Techno Retro Dad's actually airing this week, you'll hear how I became more of a Spider-Man fan and the lessons I learned from that. But like, you know, Marvel, as you were saying, you know, they kind of tried to follow up with what DC did with the Secret Wars. And now the first Secret Wars was, of course, this character, the Beyonder, who was from a completely different universe where the only thing that existed was him. And he wanted to learn about our universe after he saw through like a pinhole, you know, and everything. He wanted to learn about this other place. And so he sets up this battle world and he grabs a bunch of Marvel heroes and a bunch of villains, puts them on battle world just to kind of see what happens. Eventually, though, Dr. Doom realizes the Beyonder has all this power, and Dr. Doom finds a way to siphon and steal the Beyonder's powers, and it becomes this whole epic of stopping Dr. Doom from causing total destructions. And I believe, I might be wrong on this, but I think it's the first Secret Wars that Spider-Man had not had his costume and ended up with the alien material that became the black suit. I believe it was the first Secret Wars.
That's correct.
On the second Secret Wars, I actually did find in the library. I want to read the original Secret Wars. I did see the Marvel 90s Spider-Man series did kind of do a version of the Secret Wars, which was really fun. But the Secret Wars 2 comic, I actually did find a collection of that at the library here locally. And what it is the Beyonder realizing he didn't learn really anything from setting up the battle. So he thought, oh, I need to come to this Earth and, you know, try to become an Earthling for a while and see if I can work amongst that. Of course, when the Beyonder shows up, his power registers everywhere. And, like, the X-Men freak out, the Fantastic Four freak out. Everybody's like, oh, my gosh, we got to stop him. But he eventually manages to blend in. He turns himself kind of more complete human. He stops using his powers, and he learns from a guy. I cannot think of the guy's name now. He had stripes on his face, and he's like a molecule man. But he can control these molecules, and he tells the Beyonder, says, well, you know, if you want to learn something, the best teacher is experience. So it's basically the Secret Wars 2 was just the Beyonder going and doing all these different things, even going through the criminal underworld, building all this great wealth and doing all this stuff just so he can experience stuff. But yet, you know, three quarters of the way through, I'm thinking, are they trying to make some sort of point of this? Because really, this is lame. But it was interconnected with a lot of other characters, and when you get to the end of each issue, it says these particular events will be carried if you read these Spider-Man comics or these X-Men comics or whatever. And I thought, okay, well, that's probably where the interesting stuff is, because the main 9 books, or I think it was 9 of them, of the Secret Wars 2 were just stupid. I could not finish it. I have put that away and decided, you know what? Oh, look, I found another book that's celebrating 75 years of the Joker. I think I'd rather read that.
Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice.
Exactly. So I don't think Marvel was doing as good with these. I mean, granted, the Secret Wars seems like it's being excited, but I know DC was able to come back and have another Infinite Crisis and keep coming back to the table. And I don't know, in my mind, I think I've read some of those, if I remember correctly, and it seemed DC was actually better at doing these big events than Marvel was.
Well,
but that's just my opinion. Somebody might say I'm crazy for that.
Oh, well, everybody's bound to their own opinion. Yep. The fact is, I love both DC and Marvel.
I do, and I'm more of a Marvel guy.
And I'm more of a DC guy, but that's okay. But
he's a little country, I'm a little bit rock and roll.
That's right, that's right.
And I'm over here listening to Donnie Emery.
There you go. That's it. I like them all. Truth be told is I love Marvel very much. And I've said it 100 times before. If it weren't for DC, Marvel never would have become what it was. But if it weren't for Marvel, DC never would have became what it was. Because, yes, DC launched it all with Superman, Batman, all that.
Way back in the day.
And then when Stan Lee came around, well, when Stan Lee was turning 40 and about to retire, and decided, because it was his wife's suggestion, that he make the best comic that he wants to do.
Yeah, and it was Fantastic the final Four. Issue of Amazing Fantasy,
that's
too.
Right.
That
Fantastic
he really
Four.
Pulled the trigger, too, with the Fantastic Four. Yeah,
that's
and then
right.
Amazing Fantasy 15, the final issue of a book. He's like, you know what? I'm finally going to do that character that I've always wanted to do with a teenage hero, mm-hmm. but they tell me he's not going to work.
Yeah, and made the Hulk. And the Hulk
yes.
was
made
not,
a monster
and
that
Hulk,
was a hero.
Hulk was not a hit at all for the first, like, I don't know how many times he tried to release him. And people did not like him. That's why he was out of Avengers after like 3 or 4 issues. He just could not become a hit. And it wasn't until finally he put him into a comic book that was already going and it was already had 6 or 7 issues and he tried to sneak him in. And that eventually became Hulk's book, but that it took for a long time for people to warm up to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a combination of Frankenstein and Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah. He's a monster but he's a hero.
Yeah.
And I guess it was kind of maybe weird for people to embrace that concept, you know, that this
like
big monster thing.
Kind of
yeah,
deep, you know?
It's really cool.
Well, speaking of the Hulk, the 80s were a really interesting time for everything that was happening around the Hulk. Coming out of the 70s, you had the Universal TV show the Savage She-Hulk, which was Stan Lee's first original creation in like 10 years.
That had 1980. She-Hulk, yeah.
Yeah, She-Hulk became a member of the Fantastic Four coming out of Secret Wars. But also in the 80s, you had Peter David starting his run with the Hulk and exploring this, you know, all of these other facets and other sides to what made the Hulk. They initially changed him back to gray, and he became the Mr. Fix-It mob enforcer in Las Vegas.
I still have a lot of those.
And, you know, you get the you've got the first really big Todd McFarlane issue with the Hulk fighting Wolverine.
Yeah.
You've got, there's a lot of stuff happening with the Hulk in the 80s that I just found really interesting.
And for a short while, they even had Hulk. This is when he was in his Mr. Fix-It days. Hulk and Ghost Rider and who was the other ones?
Spider-Man and Wolverine.
Wolverine. They became the new Fantastic Four for a short while there.
Okay, now see, I didn't know this.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. I would read that.
It was fun because it was such a weird combination of characters.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Hulk did, and then they had that battle, and I still have this issue where Hulk was fighting himself in his mind.
Oh yeah.
And you had Bruce Banner sitting in this trench, basically, that the Gray Hulk and the Green Hulk had basically made by falling into it to the ground.
Wow.
And he's in a trench watching his two personalities fight, and what ended up happening was they ended up combining them. And so when the 90s began, you had a combination of the Gray and the Green Hulk, which I actually really liked because it had the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
That's where you got the short little short mop top on top, you know?
To help explain this for anyone who's not familiar with the Gray Hulk, is that was the super intelligent version of a Hulk.
Yeah.
He was still strong and everything. Not quite as strong as the Green Hulk, but he was smarter. He had the brains of Bruce Banner.
And Hulk had only been gray in the very first issue of the Hulk because they could not get the coloring right. So they ended up making him green, which, of course, we'll always like the green better because that's what we're used to. But he went from having blue pants with gray skin to being green with purple pants.
Yeah. And there must be something about gamma radiation that makes your pants turn purple.
Actually, it is. That was a no prize. That was handed out. It was determined that the radiation exuded in the change from Bruce Banner to the Hulk physically affected the color as well as the size of his pants.
Even the size gives you the
keeping the Comics Code Authority very happy.
Yeah, that's right. Well, sometimes you got to do what you got to do, you know?
You got to do. But we can't talk about the 80s, and especially in Marvel, without talking about the run of Chris Claremont on the X-Men. Had been a book that had struggled when it had first come out, and they'd actually stopped continuity and then brought it back with the giant-sized X-Men where they introduced Colossus and brought Wolverine into the team, Storm Nightcrawler. And so suddenly you got all these new characters in the X-Men that kind of got it going. But then Chris Claremont he did this. I haven't gotten to read everything he wrote, but my goodness, he decided at one point, you know what, let's take away Storm's powers. Probably the most powerful of the X-Men because she controls the weather itself. Suddenly she loses her powers and gets a mohawk, you know. He'd mess with the characters, but not take it so far to where I guess the average reader wasn't, you know, intrigued to keep going. And then he had crazy ideas like, Phoenix, Phoenix Saga.
That was great.
The Dark Phoenix Saga. And which I do have a book collection of the Dark Phoenix Saga, and it is so good. And he added such a drama, which is something.
Well, it's good if you're not a mushroom person.
The what?
It's good if you're not a mushroom person.
Because it's so creepy?
Because the Phoenix destroyed a planet comprised of mushroom people.
Right. I was like, you lost me at the mushroom. I was like, what's he talking about mushrooms for?
Is he having one?
Okay. And which, of course, causes the Shi'ar to get very upset because she wiped out an entire planet populated by mushrooms. But the drama going on was very grown up. It wasn't very comic booky, you know. It wasn't "ha ha, I shall fight thee, villain." It was very human underneath the surface of some of the things going on in those comics, and it was just amazing.
Where I think X-Men was brilliant was every teenager. Well, I'm putting everyone together. I shouldn't do that, but most teenagers feel different and strange because they're going through changes that they're not used to. They don't feel right. And so
growing hair in funny places.
Yeah, all these things, you know, natural things, but you're almost half embarrassed as a kid and all that kind of stuff. So when you're reading that, at least this is what it was for me, it made me feel good to know that you weren't alone.
Right.
Everybody pretty much feels weird at some point in their life. And, And I still feel that way sometimes, yeah, but I'm okay with it.
And the most famous bit of Wolverine ever written was, of course, at one point at the beginning of the Dark Phoenix saga, before she's completely been changed by the Hellfire Club, is the X-Men have been kind of lured into a trap. And I forgot the character's name. Sebastian Shaw, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Who was able to cause Wolverine's density to increase. And he falls through all the floors and down into a sewer and is presumed dead.
I remember that.
And the last frame of that comic is Wolverine coming out of there. It's like, you had your shot, suckers. Now it's my turn. And that's some of the very next issue, some of the greatest Wolverine I think I've ever read, where he's going through. And especially at one of the goons, he's like, now you got to be thinking. Did he pop one claw or all three? You know, because he's got the claws, yeah, against the guy. He's like, what happens if he pops the next one? You know?
The Dirty Harry. Tell me. Dirty Harry
likes, yeah, that. He Dirty Harry's one of these guys. They're like, yes, this is awesome. So, next thing you know, Wolverine is very popular.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Okay, well, is there anything more from Marvel, Eric, that we haven't covered that you can think of?
Oh, let's see. Well, we've got Frank Miller on Daredevil.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy, yeah.
And yeah, and the Electra saga. And, oh, yeah, very much so. I mean, back in the 70s, you know, it was definitely one of the darker Marvel books. But with Frank Miller coming on and taking that task, you know, you've got everything from Bullseye killing Electra to the Fall from Grace storyline, you know, which really does affect the book even up to this day. There's still a lot that harkens back to what Miller did in those issues.
Yeah. Kingpin wasn't near the great character he is now because of Frank.
Exactly.
And golly, I can't remember who wrote it, but I actually have the original issues. I remember I was very excited to get these because I remembered seeing this on a Marvel card. I would have had the Fall of the Kingpin. That was a, yes, Marvel milestone.
Yes.
And I actually found all issues of that series, and I collected them, and I haven't read those in a while. But oh, it's really, really, really good because you get a lot of history of how the Kingpin became the Kingpin. And I saw a little bit of similarity to some of the storyline in that Daredevil series on
Netflix.
Which
is good. Really good.
I loved that they gave some origin to the Kingpin and really fleshed out the Kingpin. And I can't think of the actor's name.
Oh,
who played him? But he's been in done so many great things. But
Vincent D'Onofrio.
Vincent D'Onofrio. His portrayal of the Kingpin was just great because he'd go from being very, very tender when he's meeting Vanessa and stuff like that to just that scary monster rage. He just brought it to life and everything. And I think that's why that series perhaps was so successful, is because he had such a great Kingpin. And
even as a kid, you think for a minute there that he was a poor little kid and nothing wrong. Then you see, no,
you feel bad for him with his father. But then when he kills his father, you're like, whoa!
You're like, oh, that monster was already in there.
Yes, but especially when he's beating his father. I'm sorry, spoiler warning. When he's killing his father and he's repeating his father's words back to him, you don't let up. You keep beating until he quits moving. And you're like, oh my gosh.
Well, you know, that was a much better depiction in the Daredevil series than D'Onofrio's previous Marvel work.
What was it?
He was Thor.
Right.
That was him.
Right.
Adventures.
Thor, the old TV movie?
The
Adventures in Babysitting.
Adventures in Babysitting. Yeah, I was about to say that.
Oh, that
Adventures in Babysitting. But I
didn't realize that was him.
I think he was.
Yeah.
There's somebody who was famous. I think it was him also who did the TV movie with the... with Hulk? Was that him again?
I don't think it was him, but...
Yeah, I don't think that was...
We'll look that up. Yeah. But I remember Vincent D'Onofrio being in Adventures in Babysitting.
I forgot. I didn't realize that was him all these years.
Yeah.
I just watched it a year ago. I had no idea that was him. But I will say his eyes always look familiar.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course, I the first thing I really remember him from was being the Bug in the Egger suit.
Yeah, he was
from
great.
Men in Black.
Well, you know, and that the Men in Black series, it initially started out as an independent book, but Marvel had the rights to that too.
Yep. Snatching it up, buying those smaller companies in there, and of course then Disney snatched up Marvel.
Very brilliant.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of wonder, because I've been hearing rumors about, you know, some further Men in Black movies. Is there a way that they can connect those in with Marvel Studios and maybe get them into Marvel Cinematic Universe? Wouldn't that be interesting? Because then you had... like the alien invasion in New York with the Avengers fighting them off, it would be and you got more alien stuff coming, you know. It would be awesome to have the Men in Black suddenly get involved.
Will Smith versus Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, something like that. Like Guardians of the Galaxy. What if they came to Earth and suddenly there's, you know, JFK.
Tommy Jones. And
you know, like, Get your busted self off of my raccoon-infested world.
And you see Tommy Jones, you're not welcome here.
Why are you having a talking tree there, Stumpy? just imagine the possibilities. I would love it. We'll just say that. Yeah. But then, let's see, who's been putting, I guess Universal's been putting those out, right? Yeah. So, Universal has been known to, I guess, kind of play ball with Marvel, with the... being able to, well, I know Paramount definitely played ball, but Universal kind of, I guess they kind of lost the rights, though, to Hulk. I think they just kind of gave up on it because they didn't do such a good job with Ang Lee.
Another thing, going back to Marvel in the 80s, another thing that they did with Hulk, they did a lot. They had the Hulkbusters at the late 80s. Mm. The Hulkbusters were, it was kind of weird because Bruce Banner was almost in charge of the Hulkbusters at the time. And he himself was involved with trying to get rid of the Hulk. And yet, because he just wanted to be normal. And you had Rick Jones, who became a Hulk. Rick Jones was the young man that Bruce Banner, basically, how Bruce Banner became Hulk was Bruce Banner saw this young man, who's Rick Jones, pushed him out of the little trenches, and he got hit with the gamma rays. So during the late 80s, here, Rick Jones, he became a Hulk. And it was very interesting. They had fight each other even a couple of times. He had long hair. It was like a lighter green Hulk. With long hair.
With a mullet.
Yeah, that's it. A mullet. That's you're right. That's right on the dot. He had a mullet.
Oh, and speaking of the 80s, we had kind of mentioned this before we started recording. The Teen Titans.
Yes.
Yes, DC.
Yeah. Meanwhile, back on DC Planet.
And now this was a definite update from the Teen Titans that DC had previously put out. The original series was all gee whiz, and this is groovy and swinging 60s stuff. But
it's like the 60s and 50s, you're right.
But with George Perez and Marv Wolfman, they definitely brought the X-Men sensibilities with them to DC working on Teen Titans.
And they were smart enough to take some of the old characters of Wonder Girl and Robin and that kind of stuff, and they used them still, but they made them more modernized. And then you had a lot of new people. Like Cyborg was my favorite of the new characters. I love Cyborg.
Changeling, was he one of them from there?
Changeling, yes.
Beast Boy. Yeah.
Yeah, and Beast Boy had been on with Doom Patrol previously.
Yeah. But Changeling is what they called him mostly back then.
Yeah.
And then Starfire.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious though with Starfire because she's had some personality changes from my understanding because I've never really read a whole lot of DC, but I kind of like the way she was presented in the Teen Titans animated series where she's very kind of just sweet, kind of innocent, very nice. But when it's time to throw down, she can throw down with the best of them. From what I've seen in some of the later ones, they kind of made her this kind of gruff, a little bit warrior, but kind of I want to pick a nice child friendly word, but she is a little bit.
Sultry.
What was the word here?
Sultry.
Sultry is a good word, I guess. Because I've actually seen a bit of a comic where she kind of offers herself up to somebody and is scolding him for he's all hung up on this other girl and not her. And it's like, well, you just missed out. But I was like, wow, this is very different from the Starfire that I really liked from the Teen Titans.
Well, she's a little bit promiscuous. They had her and Robin, who then became Nightwing. That's when he did that during Teen Titans days. And you can see a great big collar sticking out, you know, it was real great. But anyway, they kind of had a relationship going on. So here I was, preteen, reading some of this stuff. Here I was like, I realized 9, and then 10. Of course, I didn't understand half the stuff they were saying because I'm always a late bloomer. And because I'm about 15 right now, emotionally speaking. Sure. But anyway, that comic book, I'm like, okay, I don't know what they're talking about. But either way, she's pretty. For an orange skin gal.
But so how was she like originally? Was she more like in the cartoon?
You know, I'm not familiar, you know, that familiar with the characters. Most of what I'm am familiar with is with the betrayal by Terra of the Teen Titans. Ooh.
Yes, that was a big storyline. I remember in the cartoon. It was good
stuff. In the 80s, and I can't remember it all because it's been so long, and I wasn't that much of a reader back then even, but you had her, and then you also had Raven, and you had Jericho. And I could only remember that Jericho was this dude with a blonde afro and big sideburns that came down near past his cheeks nearly. And he wore like these white puffy arms. So he looked like he should have been on the show Dungeons & Dragons. And he had this purple vest looking thing. But he ended up being a villain. And he turned on the team, I remember. And that, I was like, no, he's a friend, and friends don't hurt friends. And but, you know, and then when you become a teenager, like, oh, yeah, sometimes they do.
Somehow or another, I can picture Chris Jericho dressed this way, too.
Oh, well, I wonder why.
I wonder if that's where he got it.
Jericho.
He was breaking down the walls.
Well, you do know who Jericho's father is, don't you?
No, I can't remember. Hockey player. It seems to me like... Well, it seemed like Jericho's name, was supposed to be Slade's?
Yes.
Oh, okay, we're talking about the character again.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah, Slade Wilson.
I know Chris Jericho's father is a big hockey player, but okay, but yeah, so Jericho in the comics, he was Slade's son?
Yeah.
Yeah, the son of Deathstroke.
And that's where he came
not
in.
Not familiar, big. Slade is better known as Deathstroke.
Yeah.
The Terminator.
Yeah.
Yes, I forgot.
He was called Terminator. The Terminator for a little while.
Deathstroke the Terminator.
Yeah, and to me, Deadpool, I think, is a little bit of a copy of Deathstroke to me. Maybe just because they look similar.
To be honest, I don't know. I think that Deathstroke was first.
Yes, Deathstroke was first. But every time I've seen Deadpool and I look at Deathstroke, I'm like, yeah, it looks like Deadpool, they kind of were inspired by Deathstroke a little bit, except for they gave him a sense of humor.
There's several characters like that through both universes. I mean,
Darkseid
and Thanos have... by the same guy, too.
Yeah.
Well, both Rob Liefeld and Fabian Nicieza, I'm probably slaughtering his name, they've both confirmed that Deadpool eventually was a parody of Deathstroke.
Ah, see?
Now, even down to the name, you got Slade Wilson as Deathstroke, Wade Wilson as Deadpool, the Merc with a Mouth.
Yeah.
Wow.
Huh. It'd be awesome to see a crossover comic of them, too.
That'd be kind of fun.
And I really did, though, and speaking of going back to Arrow again, that their portrayal of Deathstroke in the second season of Arrow was flippin' awesome, I gotta say. But still, my favorite full-motion version of Slade Deathstroke was the... that game now, I forgot what it's called. I have it over there. Injustice. That's what Injustice, the fighting game. They'd have, like, before a fight with Deathstroke, he's, like, putting swords in place and all these different guns, just has all this gear when he's ready to fight you. And he's a great character on that, because at any second he can whip a gun out, shoot whoever's fighting, or whip out a sword or whatever. He's just got so much gear. And I think that's where I really was seeing the similarities to Deadpool, because Deadpool's the same way. You know, he's got as many guns and as many swords as he could possibly carry, and he'll use it any of it.
Well, when Deathstroke was going strong and they call him the Terminator, that was only, like, a year or so, or maybe two, after the Terminator came out, the movie The Terminator with Arnold, which makes me think that they probably did that on purpose just because it was so popular at the time.
Yeah.
It was on videotape. You know, you could rent it.
Yes. Yeah, a videotape? What's that? VCR? That's unheard of.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, we want to get into all that.
Yeah. Anyone following my regular Facebook page will have seen some fun conversations I've had when I mentioned a VCR.
Marvel versus DC, Beta versus VHS. We'll get into that. Coke versus Pepsi.
Cobra versus G.I. Joe. Oh, no, wait a minute.
There you go. No, that'd be more Transformers versus GoBots.
There you go.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I still like the GoBots, though.
Oh, it was fun.
I like the GoBots.
Whole
other topic, which we'll have to get into that at one of these days, really, the GoBots. Because I did enjoy me some GoBots.
Real metal.
A lot smaller, too. Mm-hmm. Cheaper. You could actually buy them for about the price of a Hot Wheel. But anyways, yeah, we're way off. Another fun thing, just while we're talking about outside characters, is Marvel getting to... because I believe it was Marvel. They got the Transformers and G.I. Joe. They were able to work those properties.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you
Star
were watching,
Wars.
Yeah, the Star Wars comics. Of course, that started in the '70s. I don't remember how long the Star Wars comics ran.
Well, in the '80s, the one I remember the most that I read, God only knows how many times, and that was the one where Boba Fett crawls out of the pit.
Oh, hey,
the Sylark pit, and he crawls out, and he's fighting Han Solo and Princess Leia up on top of the sand. Dunes, what do they call them? The things the Jawas were in.
Sandcrawler.
They're fighting on top of that, and they're coming to the pit again. And Han and Leia are able to jump off and get out of there, but Boba Fett goes down with it, and it gets swallowed up again.
Oh,
yeah. Wow. I remember that. I read that only God knows how many times.
They've re-released those as collections now. I'd really like to get it. Now, I actually do have, at a comic convention that was just a room full of comics, I did actually get some of the first Star Wars comics where they were adapting the first film. They're not in very good condition, so I got them cheap.
I actually have the reprint of those when Dark Horse was able to do it.
Oh,
and
wow.
I gave them to my nephew recently. Hopefully he won't destroy them. But the truth is, I felt like I had to simply because they saw the films for the very first time. They were so excited. And I thought, you know.
Just had to share the love.
That's right. Gave them a lot of toys and things.
Oh, my goodness. But yeah, I actually even have an Indiana Jones Marvel comic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a couple because I've got a film adaption somewhere that I think something spilled on it.
But
I do have a – yeah, I know. It's terrible.
No. But meanwhile, DC was covering great things like V, The Final Battle.
Oh, V was very popular
Yeah, they really did. I liked it.
I think I do have a regular Indiana Jones comic that was like Further Adventures of Indiana Jones somewhere.
They both did a lot of that back then. Even in the 70s, you had Logan's Run for – I believe it was Marvel. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so yeah, all sorts of those kinds of things.
I think Buck Rogers, I remember seeing a comic. I don't remember who was doing it, but.
They had a lot of stuff like that back then. It was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Star Trek
comics,
Had been with both. One time was with Marvel originally, and then they went and they was with DC, and then went back to Marvel, and then back to DC, and they've been all over the place.
Didn't they once cross the X-Men with Star Trek?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have it.
I'd like to read that.
I'll have to find it for you.
Because that would be the most bizarre thing.
Well, it is. You got Captain Kirk and Cyclops, and you know, it's just bizarre. Wolverine talking to Spock, you know.
But also, I do recall like Marvel having a license for Rainbow Bright, so they were trying to get girls to start reading.
I remember the license they had for Alf as well.
Those were called Star Comics. They were they had He-Man, the Thundercats. They had the Power Pack. I remember this. They had Ewoks and Droids, because those were two cartoons back in the day. Yeah. And they had it seems like Strawberry Shortcake was one of them. They had Pound Puppies. They had a whole bunch of these types of things, you know. They were fun for kids.
And it's amazing they didn't have any, some. like WWF comics that I'm aware of. Because they actually, if you watch the old WWF, you'd actually see a copywriter of Marvel. Marvel had gotten involved with it.
What had happened with that was back then, and I'm pretty sure because of Hulk Hogan, whose name was the Hulk, pretty sure at the time they may have, sometimes they would call him Incredible Hulk Hogan. So I'm sure there's some kind of lawsuit involved with that. But that being said, they used to sell these ice cream bars, and the illustrations on it was from Marvel Comics. They were comic book drawings of them for a long time. Yeah,
I didn't know that they were the ones.
I had a Coco Beware one once when I went to see Hacksaw Jim Duggan wrestle. I got the Coco Beware ice cream bar. You know,
and yet we never got that CM Punk ice cream bar.
No, never got it. In reality, they actually had made one at one time before, back in the early millennium when he was just starting off. They had made one of him.
Cool!
Yeah, so anyway, his Marvel Comics and you could even back then order playing cards that had those illustrations on them. And you know, you had Macho Man, Hogan, you had Andre and Elizabeth. But it was all Marvel. Marvel involved. Good stuff.
Yep.
They should have had a comic strip. That would have been fun. As cartoony as all that stuff was, is. That'd be perfect.
Yeah. So while Marvel had all kinds of different television things going on also at the time, because you had an Incredible Hulk series and a series of TV movies, DC really, I think, had the movies pretty well dominated in the
80s. Except for Howard the Duck.
Well, there you go. Produced even by George Lucas, you know. But you know, DC had all those Superman movies, even if they did start going kind of downhill.
Yeah.
And then finally, you know, ending the 80s, DC really just killed everything.
Swamp Thing movies.
Yeah. But Batman, 1989's Batman, completely changed my perspective of Batman, because I was used to the 60s series, and I loved the 60s series. And then suddenly when I first saw the first commercial for the Tim Burton Batman, I was like, what is this? This is not the Batman I was familiar with. Because unfortunately, I hadn't gotten to read a whole lot of comics in the 80s because I was a little kid with no money.
Well, that being said, too, and they weren't dark or anything, but in the early 80s, it was kind of bizarre. The late 70s, early 80s, you had Hanna-Barbera making cartoons of Batman and Superman, but you also had Filmation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Filmation Superman.
And so you had two different things, and the same kind of thing happened with Marvel, where they were having different companies making it, you know. So you have a lot of great cartoons, like, you know, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends and all that.
Love it.
And, that's where I first saw Iceman.
Yep.
And all that.
And, of course, Firestar.
That's
that was the beginning
from.
Of Firestar, yeah.
So they had all those great cartoons. I say great. I watch them now. They're not great, but I still love them.
I still love it. I've been watching The Amazing Friends here over, you know, overnight when I'm, you know, settling in to go to bed. I've been watching that
fun
here lately.
Stuff. It's, like I said, not great cartoons, animation, but fun. A lot of fun.
A lot of fun. Although there was times when I was a kid, I wondered if Firestar was supposed to be naked or something because you couldn't tell she was wearing anything because her costume was just like this. There were, you could see that there was a collar if you looked close enough. But it looked like she was wearing gloves and boots, but she was just like, I thought maybe she was, when she was doing her big transformation, she was turning herself yellow or something. Because, you know, but it was so close to skin color that I was like, is she naked?
Well, of course you'd think that, young man.
I was 5 or 6 now, or whatever.
Now, with that being said, there was fire with the Justice League International where, yeah, I think you're a little bit closer to the mark on that one.
Really? So there was
talking about another 80 series. I believe Fire didn't have was clothing optional.
Maybe, or is this a male or a female?
Female.
Ah, so maybe her clothes burned off. Turned to flames. Lower the flame off and suddenly, whoops!
But the Giffen Justice League from the 80s was hilarious. You know, you had Guy Gardner getting decked with one punch by Bat.
Yes.
You had Booster Gold and Blue Beetle off trying some quick get-rich scheme.
I love those two. They're so much fun. They, to me, basically what you would have got when you had, and go back to wrestling for a minute, Edge and Christian. They've been very good as Booster Gold and Blue Beetle of those days. They're always kind of getting involved and getting themselves in trouble, but they're a lot of fun. Egotistical, but fun.
So one of the other big things going on in the 80s was Jason Todd, the new Robin, or the second Robin, I guess, not really the new one, but the second Robin.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And Jason was the kind of... Well, he was stealing the hubcaps off of the Batmobile is how Batman discovered him.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And, of course, nobody liked him.
That's right. He was kind of an obnoxious, hard-headed kid that just could not seem to get the point. And so what had happened was that DC decided to allow the viewers, if you will, the readers, to vote whether they wanted him or not. And we were saying that this is kind of like what was going on with Saturday Night Live, where you could vote if you wanted Andy Kaufman or whoever to be fired. It was before the internet days and before the fans could be involved. So this was a kind of a big thing. The fans got to decide. And they decided to out him. They decided to get rid of him.
Now, we should also mention that the original Robin, Dick Grayson, he had, of course, become part of the Teen Titans, was leading the team, and eventually became Nightwing. But he is now separated from Robin. And Batman didn't quite seem the same without a Robin. Although, you did have in the mid-80s Frank Miller, who wrote, The Dark Knight Returns?
Yes.
Stuff like that.
It was supposed to be a futuristic.
And Batman Year One and stuff. Or he was writing a Batman without Robin. And I guess still made that concept popular, Batman on his own. But there's just something about Batman.
Well, yeah, because even in Dark Knight Returns, there was a Robin. It was a female Robin in the future.
A little girl.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And Dark Knight Returns came after the death of Robin. There's a lot of callbacks to Jason. Having been killed.
Yeah. And, Jason has been depicted being killed in other medias other than the comics where he's being beaten with a crowbar by the Joker.
Yeah, that was in the comic, yeah.
And every stroke of that crowbar was another fan saying, die, Jason, die, really. But I remember I think it was just simply called The Red Hood. It was a DC animated straight-to-DVD where it actually had, where Jason Todd had survived, and Batman had this guilt, though, of... being unable to save Jason, and like the building he was in even blew up and everything, and then suddenly there's this Red Hood character, and it turns out it's Jason Todd, and he's alive.
Well, we know who the original Red Hood was, right?
The Joker.
That's right.
Whatever his name was before, we don't know, but he was the Red
Hood. We'll say Jack Napier just for 89 reasons.
There you go.
But spoiler warning, the latest incarnation of Jason Todd, which I could be wrong about this, but I've been playing the Batman Arkham Knight game. And when the Arkham Knight first appears, you know, he's referring to Batman as old man, and he knows how all of Batman's moves, how the way he thinks. He knows everything about Batman. And it makes me think that's got to be Jason Todd. Now, I could be completely wrong, and I hope I didn't spoil anything in the game story for anybody. But I'm kind of excited to see the character coming back and being used as a villain in this game. And I'm looking forward to knocking the daylights out of him because he's been a real pain in the neck in this game.
Well, that, if he is a villain, if it's him and all that, it would fit to the personality he always pretty much had. Because Batman did try to stop him from going in and getting involved, but he wouldn't listen.
Yeah.
Hard-headed.
Hard-headed. And so then, let's see. Was it in the 90s, though? That
1990, exactly. 1990.
Well, we'll pick up on that one for the third Robin, Tim, who has stuck around.
Tim Drake.
Good old Tim Drake.
Red Robin.
Yeah, now he's the Red Robin because, well, although Damian Wayne, I guess, is dead now.
I don't
know. Oh, no. Damian's back.
The what?
Damian is back.
Damian is back. I never liked Damian. He's the new Jason Todd. He needs to die.
Hey, be careful, though. That's Bruce's son you're talking about.
Yeah, Bruce and Talia had a son that Bruce didn't know about. And yeah, but Damian Damian was his name.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been reading that he's got his own series right now, Robin, Son of Batman. Huh. And he's on a quest to redeem himself.
Wow. That might be
so, good. Only a couple issues are out, but it's been good so far. It'll be interesting to see where that goes.
Yeah.
But even Damian's storyline begins back in the 80s.
Yeah.
With that story with Bruce and Talia. And yeah, I can't. Son of the Demon.
Son of the Demon. Yeah, because didn't Ra's al Ghul wanted them, or Ra's al Ghul? Keep getting it both ways. But didn't he want them to have an heir? He wanted him with Talia, and he wanted Bruce to be the new head of the League of Assassins, or League of Shadows, whichever you prefer on that one. So he was trying to get him and Talia married, if I remember everything.
Right. No offense, Arrow fans, but it was not Oliver Queen. That's a ripoff of Bruce Wayne.
I think that's why in Arrow you have, Nyssa? Is her, or is that the actress's name? No, I think it is the character's name.
Actually, Nyssa is another of Ra's al Ghul's daughters.
Oh.
Yeah, but I figure that's why she's being used in Arrow and you're not hearing about Talia.
Yeah, I haven't heard that name yet.
Yeah. Although that would be kind of cool if she did make an appearance. But, yeah, I was kind of good to maybe keep a different daughter around. So.
Well, after that death scene in The Dark Knight Returns, maybe not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I only saw that movie one time. I do have a Blu-ray of it, but I haven't sat and watched it because that boy is that long and drawn out. I just remember when she popped up and turned out that was Talia. I was like, yeah, I kind of saw that coming, but I didn't expect her to be so villainous.
Well,
now I know we're getting a little bit short on time here, but I don't think that we can really talk about comics in the 80s without at least mentioning those four Renaissance masters, Leonardo, Donatello, Raphael, and Michelangelo.
Yeah, we'll branch out of the DC Marvel world, sure.
That's right.
Yeah, we used to call these DC Marvel 101 and everything, but yeah, talking comics, I mean,
the fact is, this goes back to the Frank Miller Daredevil. There's an awful lot of stuff in Turtles at War because those guys were big fans of Frank Miller's Daredevil.
Yeah. And if you read the original comics, it is very dark, very gritty, not kid-friendly.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Splinter, even. You know, he's taken from the character Stick.
Yeah, he is.
And so the foot soldiers was because the hand was involved with the Daredevil. So, I mean, there's a lot of neat little wink-winks.
Yep, wink-wink, nudge-nudge, saying them all. We got four turtles.
That's it.
So, but yeah, a complete 360 that when put them on television and made them kid-friendly. And just suddenly huge, especially when that movie, of course, was in 1990, and that really got the Turtles really big then.
Everything was cowbunga, pizza, and all that.
But we'll definitely talk about the 90s next time around. There's just a lot to get into the 90s. And the 90s is when I also started to have a little bit of money where I could buy my own comics, and I didn't have to borrow so much anymore.
What really kind of helped me in the 80s and the early 90s, before I got a job and all that, one thing that really helped me was that there was a wonderful little comic book shop called the Rat Pack. And they would sell old comics for like 45 cents, if that.
Wow.
And sometimes it started more like that in the 90s. Earlier, it was like a quarter. So as a young kid, even though sometimes it'd be a year or two out of it, it didn't matter to me. I could go with a dollar and buy sometimes four or five comics, depending on how old it was. I mean, there's some I could get for a dime.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So things like that kind of helped me with to know what's up in the so important comic book world.
Yeah. This makes me want to go and track down more 80s comics, though.
I still got a lot.
Because I got a lot of 90s.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, shout out here in Arizona, Bookman's. in Phoenix and in Tucson and in and now I'm blanking out on the name, but also up north, they sell old comic books for 50 cents a piece, and that's where I've got most of my collection as awesome. Well.
That's great.
Do they have an online store?
They've got an online presence, but I don't think they have a store.
Because if I find a good, you know, online store that has a lot of those old stuff and is willing to sell it for 50 cents, I'd be happy. Because I'm looking to flesh out, for one, my Spider-Man collection and make sure I have everything from the 90s.
Well,
I've got a pretty good chunk, but I want to get more of it, and then I want to start digging into the 80s, and I need to start picking up some more Batman, but I ain't
got no
money.
Please don't hate me, folks. Please don't hate me. A year ago when I was moving, I gave away so many comics, some from the 80s, some from the 90s. I gave away hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of issues, but I still have a bunch. I still have a bunch, yeah.
I got some of them. I need to start putting more stuff away. I got comics that are branching out onto bookshelves and everywhere around here.
Well, definitely the 90s are an interesting thing, and it'll be fun to, you know, participate and hear that discussion, because you've got Image, you've got the bankruptcy of Marvel, you've got Death of Superman, you've got Nightfall, you've got all of the Green Lantern stuff, and you've got the Spider-Clone saga.
Yeah, and you even have the supposed death of Spider-Man.
In fact, I want to make a salute to a company that, to be honest, if it weren't for them, I don't think we would have had hardly any superhero stuff in the 80s, and that was Hanna-Barbera.
There you go.
Hanna-Barbera not only covered the Super Friends, but they covered Marvel cartoons. They even had X-Men one-time shot. It was on the time of Spider-Man and all that stuff. So they did.
Actually, Pride of the X-Men, I think, was still through the Marvel Animation Studios. So I'll have to look at that.
But they used to show them with the Hanna-Barbera stuff.
They
did. Of Pawpaw Bears and all that.
Pawpaw Bears.
That's right. So.
Yep. But yeah, we'll bring this back around here to talk about the 90s and... yeah, so far, I guess neither one of you really have a complete website thing. But if you wanted to follow Eric on Twitter, I think you said you were on Twitter.
Yep, I'm on there as E-double-W. That's E-D-O-U-B-L-E-D-U-B-Y-A.
Which is also his PlayStation name, by the way.
Oh, yeah, yep.
And if anybody wants to find me on PlayStation Network, that's GlueBand77. GLUBAND 77. But yeah, because I'm on the PlayStation Network and everything. And here lately, I have been broadcasting on Twitch under Neverland Podcast, me playing the Batman game. I was streaming actually today. I was trying to solve some of those riddles and find some trophies. So hey, if you're a bit of a gamer and want to see what in the world I'm doing, come and check it out. I'm still working on getting, I guess, a full channel set up. But yeah. Alrighty, but we'll adjourn until next time. But thanks for coming on here, Eric.
And don't worry, no problem. To us, it's always the 80s, always the 90s, because we're going to go back to the past.
and look toward the future, Marty.
That's right.
Oh, this is heavy.
That's right. Great Scott.
Disney music fans, the time has come. It's the Neverland Battle of the Disney Bands. Your vote will determine this year's top five Disney songs. Vote now at poll.neverlandpodcast.com. That's poll.neverlandpodcast.com. And listen to the Neverland Podcast to see which Disney band rises above the competition.
Okay, it is time for an update for the Neverland Battle of the Disney Bands. Some major things happened over the course of the last 3 weeks. There was issues with the judges, and some of the bands that were not doing so well, they kind of turned on each other. There was a little bit of, you know, this is what happens. This is rock and roll. This is what happens in a band. You know, there's some infighting, and sometimes the egos kind of clash with each other. But here's what has happened. I Won't Say I Am in Love has been fired from the Renaissance Band. And they've been replaced by a newcomer. The Circle of Life has come in to fill in with vocals. I mean, some amazing vocals. I really didn't expect I Won't Say I'm in Love to have been replaced. I thought there were some really good vocals coming from them, but... well, you know, sometimes someone who can do that African chant, I guess, is what you need. So we'll see what happens as they are now entering into round 5 of the competition. Also, the Silly Song has spontaneously combusted. That's kind of what drummers do. If you're familiar with Spinal Tap, you know, their drummers they have a problem with drummers spontaneously combusting. I don't know if it's just an effect of, you know, drumming for long periods of time. It has a weird effect on the body, and next thing you know, boof, you know, you're gone. But I don't know. Tensions were kind of high, so maybe that had something to do with it. But they have been replaced by the Unbirthday song, and there's some crazy room going on with them. And so it's really up to the game, I think, for the classic animation band. Of course, in there now re-entering into competition. We're ready for round five with them as well. And the third thing that happened over the last 3 weeks, Strange Things has just flat out quit Pixar band. Got tired of, you know, playing guitar with him. I think there was a difference of opinion between him and the bassist. Something, I don't know, but they've been already replaced by Real Gone, bringing a little bit of a southern rock kind of feel to things. So picking up the pace there with Pixar, I expect a whole new sound coming around. They're also right now entered in round five, and round five has begun. So make sure you're going to poll.neverlandpodcast.com and voting, because it's only going to last for a week, because I'm not expecting any more crazy stuff to happen, I don't think. So for the next week, these bands will be in competition. Go and see who these new lineups with these new musicians in there is taking on this week, and vote for your favorites. Well, I'd say that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Neverland Podcast. We've had a pretty good full episode here. I don't really have time for any shout-outs, but we do have some new members to the Facebook group, which I do want to remind you that we do have a Facebook like page and a group. If you simply go onto Facebook and look for Neverland Podcast, you'll find us. You'll also find links for those at neverlandpodcast.com. Don't forget that you can email us at podcast@neverlandpodcast.com, and don't forget to leave a voicemail at 816-226-6492. You're going to hear all that information again from the automated voice. I also want to remind you to donate to us from Patreon, and half of what you donate does go to Give Kids the World. It's very important to get those donations, because it does help this keep going, because, you know, I do incur an expense, although I love giving this to you for free and I love doing this. It does really help me out, and I really do appreciate it. Also, on the far right on neverlandpodcast.com, you will see a link for a shop where I have some t-shirts and mugs and things available. I am looking for maybe some alternative places to have these shirts and things made, and maybe I can cut the costs down. I get very little of those sales. The merchandise is available, and I appreciate everybody who goes and buys those t-shirts, and I hope you enjoy them. Remind you, of course, to come back next week and to keep a pixie in your pocket, and by that, of course, I mean that young at heart, good attitude that will help you get through your week, and remember to share a little pixie dust with somebody around you. All right, bye now, and God bless.
Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast. Please subscribe and rate the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Blueberry. We love to hear from you on twitter.com/neverlandpcast and facebook.com/neverlandpodcast. Leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492 and send email to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com. Join us next week, and we once again go to Disney and beyond. The Neverland Podcast is copyright Blue Band Productions, and all original content belongs to the same. Other content is copyright of their respective creators and is used under Creative Commons license.
Good night, Neverland!
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.